It is Wednesday, November 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. And coming up, Russian President Vladimir Putin blames his Ukrainian counterpart for the naval standoff in the Black Sea. And U.S. senators are briefed about the murder of a Saudi journalist in Turkey, an event that has strained ties between two branches of the U.S. government.
It's more a rift between Congress as a whole and the White House.
And singer Katy Perry releases her first Christmas single. It's all ahead.
Russian President Vladimir Putin says Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko is responsible for the standoff with Ukrainian naval ships in the Black Sea, contending it is an attempt by Poroshenko to boost his re-election chances next year. In a televised speech today, Putin accused Poroshenko of orchestrating a provocation by Ukrainian vessels for the sole purpose of winning re-election.
Meanwhile, Russian press reports indicate that Moscow will deploy additional S-400 surface-to-air missile systems to the annexed Crimean region before the year is out. The action follows Ukraine's decision to impose martial law after Russia seized three Ukrainian Navy boats and captured 24 sailors Sunday. Poroshenko is warned of the threat of a full-scale Russian invasion, citing a buildup of forces along their shared border. It was a situation that's been roundly condemned in the West as another sign of Russian misbehavior in the wake of its seizure of the Crimea from Ukraine in 2014 and backing separatists in eastern Ukraine. Heather Nauert is a U.S. State Department spokeswoman.
It's a dangerous escalation on the part of Russians' continued aggressive behavior against Ukraine. The United States continues to support Ukraine's territorial integrity. The secretary and the president both have a very strong relationship with the government in Ukraine, President Poroshenko in particular. Some of you may be aware the secretary spoke with President Poroshenko yesterday, offering our support and expressing our concern over that dangerous aggressive act on the part of Russia. The secretary is heading to NATO, as many of you know, in the coming days. I would imagine that that would be a big topic of conversation. Among the things that the U.S. government is doing, you saw Ambassador Haley's comments yesterday at the United Nations. The secretary then had a call with President Poroshenko. We put out a statement ourselves, and we're continuing to have conversations not only with NATO, but with the OSCE and other multilateral organizations who share our concerns.
She said European allies could do more to help Ukraine by enforcing existing sanctions aimed at Russia. Bino Kampmark is a senior lecturer in global studies at Australia's RMIT University. He tells International Edition's Victor Beatty much of the rhetoric coming from both countries is political theater aimed at domestic audiences, especially by Poroshenko, who faces the voters next March.
He is unpopular at the moment. He is seeking re-election, and so he has to look in the good books as a robust, formidable leader in the face of perceived Russian aggression. So this idea about mobilizing, the threat of martial law, for example, and the anticipation of a mobilization on the border is something that should be taken seriously, but we also have to remember that there is an element of theater about this. But given the fact that there is an ongoing insurgency problem, of course, in the Donetsk-Luhansk region, to the east of the country, and given the fact that there is tension between Russia and Ukraine there, it's something that we have to take rather seriously.
Russia has begun prosecuting the crew of the naval vessels that were captured over the weekend by Russia. This obviously ramps up the crisis.
Yes, it's part of the theater between the two countries. Again, the FSV functionaries and individuals who were responsible for capturing the crew and the individuals in question, the Ukrainian members, have, of course, made them essentially confess to having strayed in waters that they shouldn't have, and also confess to being aggressive to the Russian vessels. But anyone who can see and has seen the footage will obviously see very stressed individuals placed under the pump and having to give a suitable narrative to sell for the Russian audience. So essentially both sides are trying to make a lot of mileage out of the dispute stemming from that confrontation. And the question now is, of course, how far that dispute is going to spiral out of control, whether it can be contained.
Several senior European politicians have raised the possibility of new sanctions against Russia to punish it for this incident on Sunday. A Russian minister said such sanctions would possibly derail the Minsk Accord.
Sanctions have been imposed on Russia so significantly over the years, and certainly, for example, over the annexation of Crimea and over conduct associated with East Ukraine and, of course, with the various actions that have taken, ostensibly linked, for example, to the downing of the Malaysian airliner MH17. So a few more sanctions, quite frankly, is not going to make much of a difference. The Russian foreign ministry and the Russian military already know that they're perceived to be bugbears in this, and they're perceived to be hostile. So I don't necessarily see a threat all round of sanctions necessarily altering the course that's being taken at the moment.
Binoy Kantmark of Australia's RMIT University. President Donald Trump told the Washington Post this week he may cancel a face-to-face meeting with Putin on the sidelines of this weekend's G20 meeting in Argentina once he's briefed on a national security review of Sunday's incident. Trump said he doesn't like such aggression.
Here are some of the top stories trending President Donald Trump saying he's willing to shut the government over the border wall funding. The U.S. announces charges against alleged Iranian hackers.
Turkey's construction sector is in a crisis, and Afghanistan's president announces a team for peace talks with the Taliban. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists from the universities of Scotland and Kent studied and analyzed some of the world's oldest cave paintings at sites in Turkey, Spain, France, and Germany. They say their investigations reveal that rather than just being primitive depictions of humans and animals, the ancient cave art actually suggests that people from as far back as 40,000 years ago had comparatively advanced knowledge of astronomy than had been thought. The Scottish and English researchers say the animals depicted in the ancient art are actually symbolic representations of star constellations, which were used to signify dates and designate occasions such as comet strikes. The researchers who detailed their findings in a study published by the Athens Journal of History say this astronomical knowledge could have helped ancient mariners navigate the open seas, something that could have impacted migration paths of prehistoric humans. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams with Yehias Wahid. Coming up, singer Katy Perry issues a Christmas single, and we'll hear all about it. U.S. senators are receiving a closed-door briefing from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Defense Secretary Jim Mattis about last month's murder of the Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi at the kingdom's consulate in Turkey. Khashoggi was also a dissident and a U.S. resident. VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman spoke with me before the meeting about the senators' concerns.
There is a rift in Washington when it comes to Saudi Arabia, but it's not the traditional Republican-Democrat rift that we so often see at the U.S. Capitol. It's more a rift between Congress as a whole and the White House. What we see is an administration that is very much defending Saudi Arabia or the U.S.-Saudi relationship, not specific Saudi actions in terms of the death of the journalist Jamal Khashoggi, but the overall relationship and the strategic importance of Saudi Arabia in a region of the world that tends to be a tinderbox and a country that has for decades stood up to Iran. Then you have on the Capitol side, you have Republicans and virtually all Democrats coming together to say that there are some things that the United States simply cannot abide by. And the murder of a journalist is one, and the Saudi-led air campaign over Yemen, which has resulted in tens of thousands of deaths, is another. So you have two institutions, more than political parties, at loggerheads right now on the issue of Saudi Arabia.
Including, it should be noted, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, who's usually a strong supporter of President Trump.
Sarah, I spoke with Senator Graham yesterday, and he tried to explain the administration's thinking, but also signaled to me that he very much disagrees with it. This is what he told me, quote, "President Trump is focused on the strategic relationship with Saudi Arabia, which I understand. The difference that I have is that to give the crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, a pass, if he is clearly complicit, is a huge mistake. One of the most dangerous things is for an ally of the United States to disrespect our values and to be so flagrant about it." Here you have Senator Graham, who has backed President Trump on numerous issues, both domestically and on the world stage, but he's breaking with the administration on this critical question.
I think another thing that senators are concerned about is the fact that CIA Director Gina Haspel will not be attending this meeting. She apparently has heard an audio tape of Khashoggi's killing. What reasons did the Trump administration give for excluding her from this meeting?
I'm not aware of any reason that was given. Certainly here from my Senate perch, I'm not in the best location to know what specific internal communications may be going on within the administration or what they're signaling to members on Capitol Hill. But what I can tell you is that on a bipartisan basis, there is great disappointment when it comes to the fact that, by all accounts that we are hearing in the news media, the CIA has assessed that Saudi Arabia's crown prince did order this killing of the journalist, and the director of the CIA, who should be able to speak in great detail about what the agency knows, what it believes, is not taking place in this all-senators briefing. So you have Republican senators, you have Democratic senators saying that they deserve to know in detail what the administration knows, and that without Gina Haspel, the CIA director, that's really not possible.
On the other hand, I believe there are at least some senators that are backing President Trump's view on this issue.
Sarah, it won't surprise you to hear that there is not unanimity of opinion on Capitol Hill. There are indeed a number of Republican senators who say, look, we absolutely have to make it clear to Saudi Arabia that killing a journalist is not something that we can abide by. However, we can't allow the relationship to be ruptured. We can't simply toss the U.S.-Saudi relationship aside, that it is an important ally, that it is a critical player in an important part of the world. So I would say that among Republicans, there is some disagreement within the Republican caucus. No one is calling for a complete end to the U.S.-Saudi Arabia relationship. However, the voices calling for significant changes and significant pressure on Riyadh to change its ways, those voices are much stronger in the Capitol right now.
VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman.
General Motors announced this week it will slash 15% of its salaried workforce and stop production at five facilities across the U.S. and Canada. Both President Trump and Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau have expressed disappointment with the announcement. VOA correspondent Catherine Gibson is in Youngstown, Ohio, the location of one of the auto plants. She tells Sarah Williams the reaction of some of the affected workers.
Well, right now it's mainly uncertainty, Sarah, because no one is quite sure what's going to happen in the next 3 months. This GM plant here in Ohio is going into a special status that means that it's not quite shut down, but the workers are losing their jobs. some of them are telling me that they're holding out hope still that the GM company may find a different product to manufacture here and that their jobs may be saved because of that. Because if not, quite frankly, then this entire area is going to lose out. And one lady told me that it would become a ghost town.
Yes, this would affect businesses in the community, not just GM.
Oh, absolutely. There's a ripple effect across this valley. Every small business, every grocery store, every restaurant here is completely concerned that if they lose these workers, they lose their livelihood.
Now, I believe you've also spoken to several retired GM workers. What have they had to say?
Right. Well, they were interesting to speak with because they've been through these layoffs and changes before. GM has closed plants across the country. Now, what happens is that GM workers can put in for transfers to other factories across the country. Now, of course, they have to move their families to a completely different state if that happens, but that is a possibility. But remember also that with several plants closing across the country, that means competition for those remaining spots is going to be intense. So it's not a sure deal for everyone here in this Ohio plant.
Now, I understand you've also spoken with the president of the United Auto Workers Union. What did he have to say about these plans?
Well, I actually spoke with him just after he came off the line here in the Lordstown, Ohio plant. He was walking up and down, trying to encourage workers, telling them not to lose hope yet, that because this plant is going into something called an unallocated status, there's still a little shred of hope for what might happen in the future. They're negotiating. They're figuring out what product might come in here that could save these people's jobs. And quite frankly, it really is a great area for manufacturing. It's a crossroads in terms of roads, in terms of industry. There are several other plants that manufacture important components that could be used in car production. It would really make sense for a car company to continue manufacturing here in this valley in Ohio.
President Donald Trump, one of the reasons he won election in 2016, you know, he appealed to a number of workers in what is known as the Rust Belt, places like Ohio and Michigan. A number of these people have lost their jobs in the last few years as globalization has taken place. Have people talked to you about some of their perhaps political concerns? You know, because certainly another election is coming up, presidential election is coming up in 2020.
That's absolutely right, Sarah. You know, President Trump was actually here in Youngstown last summer, and he specifically told the factory workers here in this valley, don't sell your homes, don't leave the area, the factory jobs will stay here. And when I spoke to some of the workers about the president's comments, they said, you know, look, the president doesn't run GM. He's the president of the United States. He can do what he can for the American economy, but ultimately this decision is up to GM, and they made a business decision. This is how it works. They have a very, you know, resigned attitude, and they think that by and large, the president is doing what he can to help them out.
VOA correspondent Catherine Gibson reporting from Youngstown, Ohio. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter, every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
This is International Edition. It's that time of year when a number of singers release Christmas-themed songs. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins me with details about a new recording from a highly successful artist.
Today, we're talking about singer Katy Perry, who has topped the Forbes annual list of the highest-paid women in music. Believe it or not, she beat out Taylor Swift, Beyoncé, all those folks. Katy Perry's income this past 12 months was $83 million. Last year, Taylor Swift earned over $100 million and topped the list. This time, she moves down to number two on their annual list. But Katy made $83 million. Taylor made $80 million. Katy's money this year came from the sales of her latest album, which is album number 5 in her collection, Witness, plus the Witness tour that she was on for the last year or so, and the $25 million that ABC TV paid her to return to American Idol as a judge for the reboot of the show, which took place earlier this year and will continue in 2019. As I understand, American Idol is going to be back on, but not until January 2019. Now, Katy Perry celebrated a milestone in her career not too long ago. She marked the 10th anniversary of her very first song, I Kissed a Girl. And also, within the last few weeks, she celebrated the anniversary of her very first number one hit, which came in 2008, called Hot and Cold. And since 2008, Katy has collected 11 number one hits in her career. Today, we're celebrating another first. We're going to listen to the very first Christmas song from Katy Perry. This is called Cozy Little Christmas.
Everybody's in a hurry, in a flurry, shopping till they're dropping in the snow. Kids are crying, dogs are barking, catching up with folks we barely know. Sure, it's madness, but it's magic, as soon as you hang up the mistletoe. 'Cause you're the reason for the season.
It's interesting, Larry, how some singers, some performers decide to record Christmas albums, Christmas music.
Well, they want to remain relevant. And Katy has stopped touring. The Witness tour is over. She, by her own decision, has been laying very low since the tour ended. She said she wants to just kind of think about life, think about herself. You know, this hasn't been easy for Katy Perry because she grew up as the daughter of two ministers. And they were very opposed to her going into pop music. In fact, her very first album was a gospel album, which didn't do so well. And then her second album became Katy Perry in the Pop World. Her real name is Katy Hudson, by the way. And so she's had some very public breakups. She's dated some high-profile celebrities. She dated John Mayer for a while and a number of others. But, yeah, with the new sound, the new Christmas sound, she wants to stay top of mind because she's not going to be on television again until January when American Idol returns. And she's also been focusing on her relationship with actor Orlando Bloom. The two of them have a very, very hot relationship, shall we say. The two of them are very happy together. They're out in public. There's been no secret about the romance. And Katy has also expressed a desire to do some more acting. She did a very little bit of acting. She's been the voice character of an animated cartoon called The Smurfs, where she was in not one but two of the Smurfs films. In 2012, Katy Perry was named the Billboard Woman of the Year. She remains the top five digital sales artist from America of all time. She sold over 40 million albums, 100 million singles around the world. 2013, she was the top global female artist. She's got 4 Guinness Records, 5 American Music Awards, a Brit Award, and a Juno Award, and she's not done yet.
No, she sounds very active.
And I love her Christmas song. And as you mentioned, a lot of artists are releasing Christmas songs. She said she has no plans for a Christmas album. This is a one-off. She just wants to get into the Christmas spirit. It's called Cozy Little Christmas.
Thanks a lot, Larry. That's Larry London. He's the host of VOA's Border Crossings.
Just you and me under a tree. A cozy little Christmas here with you.
That's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. With Sarah Williams, I'm Yehiz Wahib. Thanks for joining us.